honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by Provident Payments, one of the fastest-growing payment consultants in America. Connect today at providentpayments.com.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, and one of those conversations that makes you do a bit of a double take. You might have already asked yourself, did he really say he's 97? Because George Paul probably sounds like a much younger man to you. He was a much younger man while serving with the 16th Armored Division during World War II.
I've read that your division was credited with liberating Pilsen, Czechoslovakia, famous for Pilsner beer. Do you remember how the people there greeted you or treated you?
I never got to Pilsen. But in general, the village where the castle was, everyone treated us well. I mean, there was no animosity that you could feel or anything like that. And boys are boys.
Yeah, we can read between the lines on that one. Oh, I know what I forgot to ask you about. There was one incident, at least one, where hostilities haven't ended, you're in a combat area, and you guys in your half-track ended up somewhere you didn't know where you were, or you didn't realize where you were?
We did not realize where we were. That's correct. As a matter of fact, on our way from Germany, I think we were driving maybe a two or 2.5 hours. And we kept seeing young men, young kids, really, teenagers, in gray uniforms. And it turned out that they were gunners, anti-aircraft gunners, in the forthcoming airfield where we were headed, I guess. And they were just walking in that direction, and we were driving in that direction. So it shocked us to see that they weren't afraid of us. They weren't armed, but they had their uniforms on. It's the only clothes they had, apparently, and they were just kids. And there was not just two or three of them, but they were kind of spaced out, and they were all heading home someplace.
So these were guys from the German Army?
German Army, that's correct. And we had learned later that they had been conscripted. They were generally like high school kids. Mm-hmm. And 14, maybe 16 years old at the most. And that's why they were trained to be gunners, because they couldn't spare older guys who could know how to kill.
So if they had been armed, you guys would have been outnumbered?
I think so. Well, maybe. Perhaps we'd have taken some fire.
I mean, that sounds like kind of a confusing moment for you.
Yes, it was. You didn't know how to react to it. Well, were we supposed to jump down with our M1s and tell them to halt? There was no one to tell us to do that.
So you just kind of kept going?
We kept on going because we were part of the point. So the point was a tank, and we were the second vehicle back. We just followed the guys in front of us.
That just sounds like one of those situations that could have gone a number of different ways.
Yeah, it could have.
But the way it went was probably the best.
It just happened. Mm-hmm. And so when we kept on going, and we came to a crossroads of some sort, and there was a larger town. I'm going to call it a town rather than a village, but it really was, in our viewpoint, a village. And there was a three-story building in there, and the local citizenry told us that it housed the pilots and the crews, whoever had to work with the airplanes down the street, so to speak. Now, we didn't know that, a whole airfield down the street, but. And so these had guys there, and they were armed. They had pistols on their belts and all that kind of stuff. And so what do? Just tell them, give me your gun? To me, it was weird. It was just plain weird. We should have disarmed them, but we didn't. And I know that we in approaching this building, we reverted back to training, and we hugged the wall, and we crept up on it as much as we could without exposing ourselves. So automatically you kind of go into that kind of a mode and so on. And then we got into the building and we saw all these mostly officers. Well, they must have been the pilots, what else? But they didn't talk English, so we didn't talk German, so. And then somebody from behind us came up and talked to us in English. One of our officers, I guess, is, hey, you guys, get back in your goddamn vehicles, blah, blah, blah. And so we turn around and walk back out to our vehicles, got in, and let's go. And then we stopped when we got to the airfield because we weren't supposed to go any further than that. So that's what happened. That was the day before the treaty was signed.
The writing was on the wall.
It was on, yeah, but we didn't know it. Well, you're the guys that know the least, the doers.
You went back to school for engineering, and you ended up spending 30 years as an engineer with Boeing. What kind of stuff did you work on for Boeing?
Oh, goodness, it was a lot of things. It was a great life. Yeah, I worked on... The reason why I went to Boeing is because Boeing at a point in time had designed and made and sold to the U.S. Navy a small gas turbine, and the gas turbine was used as a propulsion engine on the minesweepers. Now, the whole boat is made of wood so that it's not magnetically live to a mine, but by the same token, most of the engine was aluminum. The only steel was just in the blades and so forth. They liked the idea of using that kind of an engine. It was cheap enough and it was available. So I went to work for that division, and that got me into this and that and the other things. And I wound up being a test engineer, which meant I had ideas and try this and try that to make them more economical. Then I think we got into it with a Kenworth truck company, built a tractor trailer to experiment with that kind of propulsion engine, which had certain advantages to it because it didn't need a transmission. So we had that to play with. So I stayed with that for about 12 years with that division.
And that never caught on, did it? The jet-powered tractor trailer?
No, the tractor trailer did not. But it was for other reasons, because it turned out that it was more beneficial to the carrier than it was to anybody else. But in the final analysis, we found an application for it, or it found us. They made a guy had designed a drone helicopter that had contra-rotating rotors, so it didn't require a tail rotor. And so it was short, and it was easy to stow on a small hangar on the back of a destroyer. And so at that point, we were starting to get a little bit nose-to-nose with our so-called enemies in the Pacific area. And so the Navy wanted to get more life out of their tin cans, and they were all old boats. So they bought into the idea of the drone helicopter, which could carry a couple of tons. So I got into that one, and there I got into the design of the engine, and I designed a new reduction gear because I had to go to 6,000 RPM output shaft because that's what they wanted on their rotor, who knows, and so on and so forth. So I did that, and I stayed with that for a while, and then they put me as a liaison between between our company and their company to go on the BIS trials, which is the trials for the Navy's acceptance of production birds, and so on and so forth. And so then I had to go out to sea with the Navy trial people. And that was a lot of fun. It was very, very interesting. I mean, to see how the Navy lives. So we went out there, and it so happens that that particular boat had held the championship ribbon for the Atlantic Fleet on speed. So it had done over 40 knots. Now, you got to say, it takes something to a boat, which is a destroyer, is a big boat. And to see that sucker going down the water with a rooster tail coming out the stern, hey, we're moving. It was fun, and it was very professionally it was good.
Well, I just have a couple more questions for you. Thanks for all your time. I'm sure we're glossing over a lot of things, but more recently, I think maybe about 5 years ago, you got to go on something even faster than that destroyer, a big jet that took you back to Washington, D.C. with Honor Flight Southern Nevada.
Yeah.
What was that experience like for you? What'd you get out of it?
It was a remarkable experience. I cried. I couldn't stop it. It's just that for people to think back that many years, and here we are, home as old men. We made this country better. And we did it not voluntarily, but we did it. Because once we got in it, once we got that uniform on, we were different people. All of us. All of us. There's always a bad guy once in a while, but it was okay.
If there were other things on the trip that stood out more, feel free to add that. But I'm just curious, since you served in World War II, you saw firsthand why the victory was so important, what difference it made. When you're at that National World War II Memorial, and they've got 4,000 gold stars representing over 400,000 Americans who gave their lives in the war. What were the things that came to mind while you were there?
Tears. Yeah, it's it overcomes you. That is a huge number of human beings that we, the American people, sacrificed to help the world get better. What else can you say? We made it better for all of us.
Well, I don't want to forget to say thank you. Thank you for serving our country, and thank you for telling us a unique story that nobody else could share with us. Is there something, when you think back on 97 years, you've given us some highlights here and there, is there something that you would say that you are most proud of or most thankful for?
I'm proud of surviving, in the sense that I've stayed out of trouble and I've raised a couple of kids, given them a pretty fair. It's not necessarily a matter of ego pride. It's a matter of pride of having been a part of this society. And I think I'm a pretty good guy. I think I've been a good citizen. And if I had to do it again, I probably would do it again. What else is there?
Was there anything else I didn't ask you about that you think is important for us to know?
Things, but we don't have time. Thank you so very, very much for listening to an old man talk.
Well, what a privilege that has been. And a special thanks to Belinda Morse of Honor Flight Southern Nevada for connecting us to George. You can find an extended podcast version of this episode at hometownheroesradio.com. Thanks so much for listening to Hometown Heroes today. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by Provident Payments. Give your business the edge only their personalized service can deliver at providentpayments.com.